This Wellness Couch podcast is brought to you by The Wellness Breakthrough. 3 days and two nights with nine of your favourites from The Wellness Couch, all gathering together in Melbourne for one incredible event. We can't wait to see you there. Go to www.thewellnesscouch.com for details.
TheWellnessCouch.com, streaming wellness into your life.
Welcome to this week's edition of Karen's Couch. What an absolute treat to have you back here on the show with me, because this week I have somebody so near and dear to my heart. This is a man, oh gosh, where do I even start? This is a man that I've been following, gosh, for about 2 years, and I really just stumbled across him by pure chance. I was going through all these questions about my diet and what I should be eating and what I shouldn't be eating. And, you know, I had all this internal turmoil about eating animals and eating meat, because I'd been a vegan for about 17 years. And then I started training and getting fit, and all of the fitness trainers that I worked with all said to me, Kazza, you've got to get some meat into you. You've got to get meat in. You're an O blood type, and if you don't eat meat, you'll die. And honestly, I wasn't educated enough to be able to make a decision on my own. So I took everybody else's advice and I started eating meat. But what I found was I started getting fatter and fatter and bigger and more lethargic. And it reminded me of why I went vegan in the very first place. Because the reason I went vegan in the very first place 17 years earlier was because I had been diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome as a result of having glandular fever. Now, the doctors tend to diagnose chronic fatigue syndrome, especially back then when they really didn't have any other diagnosis. And I decided to cut out meat from my diet way back then, and it was more of just an instinctive act, I think. But geez, I tell you what, within a month, I was back to my full-on self, whereas previously I had to choose between whether I would vacuum the house or scrub the shower, and that was all I could do for the day. But after I quit meat and just went to a vegan diet, oh my goodness, I had energy to burn, baby. But the problem that I had back then, again, I still wasn't the most educated creature on the planet, and I think I speak for a lot of us. You know, we tend to be influenced by lots of different diets and opinions and thought systems, but we don't tend to really educate ourselves that much. And I found myself just replacing meat with rice and carbohydrates and bread and pasta, you know, and all of the processed carbohydrates. And I did get quite fat. I got quite pudgy. I think that's where I put on a lot of my weight, but I tried to address it with exercise, and of course that's what led me down the path of eating meat again. Anyway, long story short, I come across this man, he writes this book, I read the book, and it's as if he is sitting on my shoulder speaking directly to me, but not just to my intellect, but to my soul. He really got me. He understood the things that were important to me, and he understood both my intuitive direction and my own internal sense of instinct. So please help me welcome to Karen's Couch an incredible gift to humanity and society, Dr. Doug Graham. Welcome, welcome, and thank you for your book, 80-10-10.
Karen, it's a treat.
Well, I'm so glad to have you here with me today. Thank you so much. I want to talk to you about all things 80-10-10. Tell our listeners what it's about. What is 80-10-10? And then we can get into why you wrote it and how it works and what the logic is behind it, because it's so beautiful.
I can put it in a nutshell and give you a tiny bit of rationale to go with it as well. The basic concept that I looked at, having studied nutrition my whole life and always thought that there was some relationship between nutrition food, diet, and the way I feel and the way I perform. I looked for that. To be quite honest, it was more than 17 years of looking and changing my diet from a standard Western approach to diet to actually doing what everybody told me to do. And it's funny because since I was a kid, people have emphasized the importance of fruits and vegetables. They've said, you know, you've got to eat an apple a day and fruits and vegetables are good for you and eat your vegetables or you don't get your pudding and on through all the...
Oh, yeah.
You know, all through the whole thing, I've always been told to eat my fruits and vegetables. And when I finally started looking for a streamlined approach to nutrition, because I tried everything. I've tried the vegetarian, I tried the vegan, the macroneurotic, I tried all the different ways of going about eating. And sure, there were big changes, it seemed, but I got little results. Right. And finally, I just made a little change. I went from cooking to not cooking. I didn't really change the foods I ate very much. I just went from cooking to not cooking. And the next thing you know, I was having fantastic changes in the way I felt and the way I thought, my thought processes especially. I mean, to me, this was the biggest thing, was the clarity of mind. But I also felt like I'd been physically unleashed. And it was just, it was so spectacular. I had decided to do an experiment for a month, but at the end of a week, I already realized there was no turning back. So
Wow. Essentially
what I did was stopped looking at nutrition from the micro view and started looking at nutrition from a macro view. So from a micro view, what people do is they say, well, you know, well, I have to make sure I get enough vanadium and I have to get enough silicon and make sure my iodine levels are right. And you know, there's going to be enough selenium in my diet, whatever it might be, all sorts of tiny little things, you know, things that we eat in picograms and tiny amounts. And I started looking at my nutrition in terms of my food. And from a food standpoint, the easiest way to analyze the nutrition of your food is simply by the amount of carbohydrate, fat, and protein that we eat. Now, it turns out that for a tremendous number of other animals, this is the way that nutrition is figured out, is by the amount of protein, fat, and carbs they eat. Or the nutritionist will look at an even simpler view and just mention the foods. But at that point, it's simply diet rather than nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if it's a cow, we just say, well, they eat grass. Or if it's a lion, well, they eat meat. And if it's a person, they eat fruits and vegetables. But the next level down, the nutrition level, is how much protein, how much fat, how much carbohydrate, and a ratio of one to the other. So 80-10-10 is simply that ratio for humans that the scientists figured out for us. This is not my work. This is just my interpretation. The scientists figured this out. The sports scientists found out where the athletes perform best. Where do we get the best oxygen transfer, the best results in terms of blood sugar? The research scientists, the T. Colin Campbell, did the largest research study ever done on nutrition, human nutrition, called the China Study, more than 100,000 people involved. And he was a meat eater looking to prove that meat eating was a valid way to serve human nutrition. And he came out of that study as a vegan, and he also says that raw foods are the best for us, and low fat is the healthiest way to eat. So his study with more than 100,000 people proved that eating a low-fat raw vegan diet was the healthiest way to go. The most long-standing study ever done is known as the Framingham Study. It's now run for more than 50 years, and it's still running. And it's primarily a heart, but also health study. And they proved the same thing. Once again, they came out saying that low fat is the healthiest way to eat, fruits and vegetables, the best foods for you. So based on the studies, I just came up and said, well, let's eat a diet of fruits and vegetables that's a low-fat diet, relatively low compared to the way other people eat. The way most people eat is about 45% of their calories coming from carbs, somewhere between 40 and 45% coming from carbs.
Wow.
And then about 11 to 15% coming from protein, and then another 40 to 45% coming from fat.
And
so,
you know, there's a bit of a, there's always a different movement around diet. You know, on a different day, there's a different diet that's being espoused.
Yes.
And at the moment, I'm hearing lots about the low-carb, high-fat diet where there's lots of butters, lots of creams, lots of oils, lots of nuts. And I mean, they're, you know, potentially healthy fats for people who do eat meat and dairies and stuff, as far as interpretation is concerned. But it's big, you know, like it's heavy load on the fats, and it's at least 50% of their diet.
It can be 60 to 80% of the diet can be fat on the truly high fat approaches, because the protein doesn't rise all that much. The thing is with these, first of all, anytime you try to sell someone something that they already are doing or something they really want, you know, it's an easy sell. In terms of nutrition, the deal these days is mostly about weight loss. And so people are looking to lose weight. And if you can say, well, 45% of your calories are coming from carbs, if you cut out 45% of your calories, you'll lose weight. And this is true. At the same time, if you tell somebody, though, and I find this sort of the illogic, if you tell people, well, you get to eat all the meat you want, but there's nothing to put it on. You can have all the butter and cheese you want, but there's nothing to put it on.
Yeah.
The thing I think is that people are already eating all the meat and butter and cheese and mayonnaise that they want. Mm-hmm. It's not as if they get to, wow, I've been restrict. That's not where they've been restricting. They've been restricting on the desserts to begin with. The funny thing is that what they're leaving out is the health foods. They're leaving out the fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
They're leaving out the raw food. The science is in. It's not newsworthy. We've known since the 50s that when you heat meats, it's carcinogenic, and when you heat starches, it's carcinogenic. We've known this for decades at this point, and there's no news here that raw foods are better for us than their cooked counterparts, and that fruits and vegetables are healthier for us than anything else. All I did was say, well, let's actually put the rubber to the road. Let's see what happens if I eat fruits and vegetables. I did it as my own little private experiment.
Yeah.
But the results were so good, the people around me started trying it just to see, and then I started telling people about it, and eventually, after 20 years, people said, look, you've got to write a book. You've got to write a book. So 80-10-10 came out of that.
Oh, amazing. So talk to me about, you know, your philosophy around that. You mentioned that you had fantastic changes when you went from cooking to not cooking. Now, you know, even in today's society, there's huge controversy around cooking versus not cooking, meat versus not meat. I mean, you know, just as many people that say don't eat meat, there are just as many people that say eat meat and 10 times more. When you said that you got clarity of mind, what was the real difference that you noticed in the way that you behaved or in the way that you responded? Because I know certainly for myself, since I've been following more of a raw vegan diet, I'm far more calm and I'm far more placid than what I was before. And I didn't really recognize that until I read your book and really started to understand what was going on. So explain that part to me.
There's a doctor whose last name is Blaylock, who wrote a book about excitotoxins, about the additives in food that stimulate the brain, but eventually short fuse the brain, so that there's neural damage in the brain itself. They're toxic to us, but we love the stimulation. Humans love stimulation. We're suckers for stimulation.
Yeah.
We love the adrenaline rush. For me, what I noticed most was the clarity. All of a sudden, two things happened that I noticed. One was that I never lost track of what I was talking about. I used to, because I will tend to digress while I'm speaking, and then the next thing you know, I go, oh, what was I talking about?
And
that used to happen a lot, and either my friend, whoever I was talking to, would remind me what we were talking about, or they wouldn't know either. But either way, that stopped happening. I was able to maintain my train of thought no matter how much I digressed in the conversation. While at the same time, another thing that happened to me quite a bit was that I would be talking to someone or in a group and then not be able to come up with a specific word. It would be somewhere on the tip of my tongue, oh, you know that word that means da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then the other person would tell me the word, and then I'd have that word. But that used to happen to me a lot, and suddenly that stopped happening. I just knew the word. My vocabulary increased dramatically. My accessible vocabulary increased dramatically. And to me, those two things were really big. The clarity meant a lot. But I saw it portray in another way, which was that I used to be the most, okay, I've always done sport, I've always been athletic, I've always had pretty good reflexes, but at the same time, I really enjoy pushing the limits of my ability to perform.
Yeah.
And so I've suffered more accidents than anybody should ever have to go through in their life.
Oh,
almost.
No.
You wouldn't say I was clumsy, because I was also, you know, if I drop something, I can usually catch it before it hits the floor. But at the same time, it's just no end of cuts and bruises and bangs and sprains and strains and breaks. And it was silly. I mean, it was just silly, the number of accidents. And the accidents stopped happening. I mean, they just stopped happening. I almost never, I mean, I won't say I never, ever, ever have an accident. Of course I still do. But none of the sports-related accidents stopped happening. The around the house accidents stopped happening. The clumsiness just totally went away, and to me this was a big deal.
Do you think it was because you were more present? Like you're more present. You had more presence.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Mind.
It was clarity of mind. This was my awareness rose dramatically, and at the same time, my ability to be aware of other people's experiences. The social, emotional side of my awareness, that also grew to a point where I could say, well, I would have the same experience that you were talking about, that this inner calm, the peacefulness, there was. But the reason I talked about Dr. Blaylock at the beginning is I attribute this to the fact that there was no longer a war going on in my body. There was no longer this chemical
beautiful.
Warfare. And so all of a sudden, it wasn't that I became more calm, but instead I actually became a whole lot less tense and stressed and angst and tension. All that went away, and my own inner calm just could now shine through.
Oh, that's absolutely beautiful. You know, I was only having a conversation with another guest for Karen's Couch yesterday, and we were saying exactly the same thing, in that, we don't believe that we need to be adding anything more to ourselves in order to experience peace and calm. In fact, it's quite the opposite. We need to be taking things away. We need to be stripping back. We need to be coming back to real, what's real in life and the basics. What's a normal day like for you? So talk me through a normal day of eating.
Oh, a normal day of eating. I was going to say, I don't have a lot of normal days. My life, I don't tend to fall into a lot of patterns typically, but a normal day for me in terms of food is Well, it's sort of funny because I used to only eat once a day. When I was a kid, I only ate once a day. Right. I'd start eating when I woke up and I'd stop eating when I went to sleep.
And I think that's just part of being a boy though, isn't it?
Yeah, perhaps. You know, I would interrupt my eating because I would snack all day long. I would interrupt it 3 times a day for meals. But other than that, it was crazy. I really seemed to be voracious and never satisfied and always eating. And people told me, you know, if you keep eating like that, you're going to become very fat.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't happen when I was a kid because I was so active, but it did happen as I went through high school. I put on 50 pounds 1 year, and then in college I put on another 30 pounds, and the next thing you know, they add up.
Yeah,
they
absolutely.
And they don't drop off as quickly as they seem to come on, but it was just, well, eventually, as I changed my diet, odd things happened, little things happened that I didn't know. I wasn't really sure what was the most important ones. You know, where do you put your attention on this or that? What's happening? But the thing that happened that changed me, that I really said, wow, this is profound, was I had a sense of satiation after eating that I had never experienced before. And so I would eat a meal, sit down and eat all the watermelon I wanted, or sit down and eat all the bananas that I cared for, and then I didn't even think about food for another 3, 4, 5 hours, and sometimes even longer.
Wow.
Whereas before, I was always thinking about food, always prepping, always preparing, always noshing and looking for a nibble and going to the fridge, opening the pantry door and saying, oh, I wonder what I could eat next, and just carrying, oh, don't go anywhere without bringing some food with you. All of a sudden, it was a freedom. Because I never realized how I'd been so attached. And now people think that I'm really nutsy about food, right? Like, but in reality, I hardly ever even think about food until it's time to eat. And in between, I'm not even thinking. I'm free to do anything else I want because I'm completely satiated in between meals. Nowadays, I typically eat twice a day. I typically eat a lunch meal and a dinner meal. And for lunch, I have all the fruit I want. I'll just sit down and eat bananas until I'm done, or I'll sit down and eat mangoes or peaches or whatever's in season.
Yeah, yep, yep.
And lately, the grapes have been really spectacular, so I've been just sit down and eat all the grapes I want. And then I don't think about food again for 3, 4, 5 hours until it's our planned dinner time. And basically at lunch, I just eat enough so that I know how much to eat, so I won't be hungry for 3 or 4 or 5, you know, just depend, like you would with any other food. And then sit down, have my dinner. At dinner time, I'll eat all the fruit I care for. Usually I'll have some orange juice or mango or grape or pears or apples or whatever's convenient. And then I'll have a big salad. Now, I know how to prepare vegetables. I'm very good at preparing vegetables, so I might have soup and salad and wraps and slaw or whatever it is, but I'll have all the fruit I care for to make sure that I'm not going to have any cravings afterwards.
That's a big thing, isn't it? I mean, a lot of people have these big sugar addictions and they get told to stay off the sweet fruits. What are your thoughts about that for somebody that is coming off a sugar addiction that does have, you know, all of that stuff going on in the candida and, you know, all of that, where they're told.
Right.
To,
well, I'm a lot more addicted to breathing than I am to eating.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I think that when we start talking about sugar addiction, we've completely missed the point. Anybody who's ever had children knows that children put things in their mouth to find out whether or not it's food. And they put everything in their mouth. They put a pen in their mouth, stone in their mouth. But the only things that they determine are food are the things that taste sweet. If it's sweet, it's food. If it's not sweet, it's not. We test for sweet on the tip of our tongue. And all of us are designed to seek sweet. It's how we're built. We're manufactured. We're designed. However you want to look at it, our nature is to eat sweet things. And so I don't think that giving up saying I'm not going to eat sweets, or I've got a sweet tooth, I'm going to overcome it, I'm going to deny my sweet tooth. It'd be like denying your need to breathe or to urinate. I mean, you can't overcome this. This is how we're built. Mm. And if you want to be satiated, you have to eat enough sweets. Sweets aren't the bad guy here. We've shown it time and time again. Sweets aren't the bad guy. We are designed by nature. You must carry blood sugar. Sugar is involved in the chemical reactions in every cellular process, right down to even the sperm and the egg carry sugar within them. And you have to have enough sugar. Now, obviously, too much sugar is a problem,
yeah.
But too much anything is a problem. The whole nature of the concept, the phrase too much implies a problem. But the proper amounts are somewhere between 80 to 90% of our total calorie intake coming from sugar, but not from cooked sources, coming from fruits and vegetables. Yeah. This is where we're supposed to get our sugar. These are the healthy sugars.
So talk to us about, let's say we've got a family and they've been eating the standard American or the standard Australian diet, which is your typical meat and three veg with some pasta and potatoes, or they might have fish and chips, and they have the cereal with milk for breakfast, they have sandwiches with cheese and ham for lunch and yogurts, and that's their general way of eating, because that's the way that most people are conditioned or educated to eat from the time that they're fairly young. How would a family transition? What's your advice to somebody listening to the show that's going, okay, I like this guy, I like what he's got to say, and I'm ready to make a change? What advice would you give to them to begin the journey?
Well, it's a great question, and thanks for opening that door. It's a funny thing, because you and I were speaking at the beginning about doing the math and the numbers have to add up. That's the reality. Then, if you do the math and it doesn't work, well, then something is wrong, and it has to work out right. And what's been shown by health scientists and sports scientists and anybody who studies human nutrition is that human beings consume around the world, we consume about 10% of our calories from protein. Some people 11 or 12 or 13, and if you're a bodybuilder, maybe a bit more, but only the bodybuilders really go beyond that 10, 11, 12% of our calories from protein.
Right.
That's what we eat. That's the math. And then the scientists have demonstrated clearly that when we eat too much fat, there are problems that are predictable. Heart disease, diabetes, cancer. We know all of these things are actually resultant from too much fat in the diet. And that the healthiest results, I mean, the people who've done the most successful health results have all used single-digit fat consumption. We have to eat fat. We need fats. Fats are important in our diet. Mm. And you'll find fats in all fruits and all vegetables. But the healthiest results have invariably been shown by people who are consuming or recommending single-digit fat consumption, 7 to 10% of calories from fat. Again, Framingham study, China study, the Pritikin Longevity Centers for 40 years have clearly demonstrated optimum results from low-fat diets. So by the time we do somewhere around 10% of our calories from protein and somewhere around 10% of our calories from fat, we're left with inarguable math that says that pretty close to 80% of our calories needs to come from carbohydrates. People always say to me, but isn't that too much sugar? And I say to them, do the math. The math says that that's how it has to be. It's if you're eating 10 and 10 protein and fat, the only other place to go is 80% carb.
Mm-hmm. And so,
transition, the easiest transition becomes one, I think, and I've tried every possible transition under the sun with clients now for over 30 years. I mean, we've tried every way there is and looked at the numbers both short-term and long, because when you describe easiest, different people have different interpretations of what's easy, you know. But when I walk into a dark room, I turn on the light because that's the easiest transition. If I go to a swimming pool, we have the option, you know, you could tiptoe in from the shallowest edge, or you can just jump in.
Yeah.
Which is the easiest transition? Well, when it comes to our own health, I think the easiest transition is to stop doing the things that are killing us.
And I love how you talk about that in your book. You're very clear about that. You just say, just do it. Just don't waste time doing it slowly. Just dive in, boots and all.
I mean, if you're a heroin addict, they don't gradually wean you off of heroin or alcohol or smoking cigarettes. The easy transition is to just stop. So for me, you know, I know Susie Powder long ago wrote the book, you know, Stop the Madness, and she just stop.
Yeah.
But I say that I'd rather go really gentle, really easy, and say, okay, how about a short-term experiment, meaning you can go back, a short-term experiment in dietary modification. Let's just try a little experiment. What would happen if all you did was eat all the fruit? If it's daytime, you eat fruit. Fruit for breakfast, all you want. Fruit for lunch, all you want. Fruit for snacks, all you want. If it's daytime, if it's light outside, eat fruit. If it's nighttime, eat fruit or veg. And just see how you feel. Do it for a week. And just say, okay, I'm going to commit. I'm going to eat all the fruit I want. Fruit, 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 fruit. And then when I'm done with fruit, vegetables, vegetables, vegetables. Until I have all the volume that I want from vegetables. And I get all the nutrients that I want from my fruit. All the calories, all the sugars, all the micronutrients. You know, deer don't worry about their nutrients, and squirrels don't worry about where do they get their protein. They just eat food. The food that's best for human beings is fruits and vegetables. It's an inarguable message. Come on, fruits and vegetables are health foods.
Yeah.
And all the way around the world, fruits and vegetables are health foods. It's not like, well, you know, in this country they say eat bugs, and in this country they say eat shrimp or something. I mean, fruits and vegetables are health foods.
So in closing, today's show, which has just gone so quickly, so for this family that's trying to do the transition, would you suggest that they actually also go boots and all and just try doing raw for a week? Or would you suggest that they cook it and then eventually introduce more raw foods, you know, with their vegetables? What do you reckon about that?
To be quite honest, when I look at the attrition rates, the people who go back to other ways of eating, the people who succeed with the program, the people who, you know, fail in different ways, the easiest transition is just to do the program. It's the most successful. And yeah, I would literally say go for a week and have a family say, oh, let's see what happens if we just eat fruits and vegetables for a week. At the end of a week, the cooked food will still be available. They can still go back to, in fact, the fruit, the other food, which has such tremendously long shelf life, it'll still be fine in their fridge, even if they've thrown it away.
It'll still be there next year.
Yes, and that's a little scary.
And I'm talking about the meat.
Right, eventually they'll probably get rid of the bottles and boxes and cans of food and realize that they want their food to come out of the ground. They want their food to come off of trees and bushes and shrubs, vines, but I would say literally do the experiment for 1 week. Eat fruits and vegetables all you want. What most people will find is a rise in energy, a loss in weight. They'll find that they have increased clarity and that probably they're hungry a lot because they're not used to eating such volume. We do get to eat more volume of food, and this is a learning process of learning how much volume really must be consumed. But for people, you know, for most people, they do have a few pounds to lose. And so if they lose a pound or two during the beginning week of the experiment, that's good news.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think anybody who's on the standard American or the standard Australian diet, you're dead right. They definitely have weight to lose. So it's actually a bonus. Look, you know,
I'm not actually talking about a weight loss diet, although the program can be customized for weight loss. But we're talking about a health gaining diet.
And I think the thing that's so beautiful about the 80-10-10 is that it's a philosophy. And that's certainly what I've got from you as one of my greatest learnings, is that it's not about, I mean, as much as, you know, you're a proponent for the fruits and vegetables, but, you know, for somebody who just cannot see that yet, they're just not there and they're not willing to be there, at least the 80-10-10 gets them to start thinking about a philosophy around food more than looking and grabbing at the next diet that's the next fad. I think it's an incredible gift and an amazing philosophy. And even just in my own circles that I've shared your book with people, and we're certainly going to make your book available to our listeners as well. So make sure that you check out the website as to how you can get your hands on a copy of Dr. Graham's book. But certainly with the people that I've shared with in my circles, you know, initially there was a bit of hesitance. And then when they saw the transition that I'd made and they'd seen the my energy level and my, as you mentioned, your attention span and your sense of clarity. But for me, it's just been this profound connectedness, this profound sense of sensitivity to humanity and to the planet, whereas I've always been a humanitarian, but that's just been heightened since I've been eating this way. It's been, as I said, profound. And watching the people in my circles see that has been really encouraging for them, so much so now that, you know, I'm selling blenders and I'm selling, you know, smoothie makers and sending, you know, different vegetable peelers so that they can, you know, make vegetable noodles and, you know, all of that sort of stuff and start eating more raw foods and experimenting with beautiful flavors of fresh tomatoes and fresh mushrooms and beautiful, gorgeous blends of these amazing flavors. So, you know, it's amazing when you have a philosophy more than a diet. It's life-changing. So I think the world owes you a great deal, my friend.
Oh, bless your heart. bless your heart. That's most kind. I enjoy eating fruits and vegetables. I think most people do actually enjoy fruits and vegetables. We like sweet and juicy foods. And we have to settle for coffee and cake and, you know, milk and cookies. Sweet and juicy is really, I mean, a mango is just so good. If I had to give up healthy foods, how do I say it? I mean, most people look and they go, well, you know, I'm not going to give up the foods that I love. And I'm going to say, I want you to eat foods that love you back. I still love the foods that I eat, but, you know, I still love grapes. I still love mangoes. I still love a rambutan or a durian or whatever it is. But those foods don't hurt me in exchange. I really have a relationship with food that I'm going to be in for the rest of my life. And so I'd rather eat foods that are good to me, even though, you know, a lot of people look and they go, ah, yeah, but I'm always going to eat sandwiches, or I'm always going to eat pasta, or I'm attached to my pizza, or I'm attached to my meat. And I go, you know, I enjoy that stuff too. I loved all those foods, but they hurt me and they didn't take me where I wanted to go, and I couldn't maintain my health or my weight or my happiness. I mean, nothing seemed to be sustainable in life, let alone the environmental concerns, as opposed to just eating from the garden. It was just the most beautiful. The fact that it works really well, that it has no downsides whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, it's good for your health. It's good for your teeth. It's good for your skin. It's good for your weight. It's good for your awareness, the consciousness, the environment. The animals are much more fond of it too when we don't eat them.
Yeah.
But for all of that, it came down to how do I feel? And it was like, at the end of the day, to me, it was like any other relationship. I had to go for a relationship that worked for the other party, but it also worked for me. And for me, I mean, I like eating. I know all the other foods taste good, but I'm still eating food that tastes good. That becomes null and void in the equation. They cancel each other out. At that point, now all I'm left with does this food lead me to a healthy result, or does this food lead me to an unhealthy result? There's no one suggesting that fruits and vegetables are harmful to us. Fruits and vegetables are health food. And I encourage everybody to do the experiment, go to health, and see how it feels to eat 80-10-10. Then, if you love the results, you stick with it. If you don't love the results, you can always go back to the other way.
What an awesome way to end the show. What an awesome finale. That was beautifully said and beautifully put. It's just so clear, and it's just so obvious as to what people need to do in terms of a next step. And, you know, you're so spot on. Today we've had Dr. Doug Graham on the couch with us, everybody, and I hope that you've enjoyed him as much as I have. What an amazing man and what an amazing journey that you've been on. You know, that whole philosophy of just experimenting with your food, just do it for a week. What have you got to lose? You know, you've been eating food that hasn't been loving you back, chances are for many, many years. Give yourself a week. Be kind enough to yourself to just experiment for a week and see how you feel. Dr. Doug Graham from 80-10-10, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks again, Karen. It's a treat to be with you. I look forward to having more chances to chat. Oh. Thanks for opening up your mind and your body to being able to do the experiment. Try 80-10-10. I know you'll love it. What's not to love about eating a sweet and juicy diet?
Oh, geez, it just sounds so sumptuous. But I love that. Have an intimate relationship with your food, and hopefully that will then lead to an intimate relationship with yourself. Thank you.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it is succulent. It is luscious. Mm. Fruits are decadent eating. And I enjoy that part. I'm not suffering in any way.
You certainly don't sound like it. So thank you, everybody, for joining us today on Karen's Couch. I hope you've absolutely loved every minute of it. If you've got any questions for myself or for Dr. Graham, please don't hold back. I will make sure that we get our questions to him. Go to our Facebook page at allthews.facebook.com/Karen's Couch. Post your comments there and I'll make sure that Dr. Graham gets your comments and your questions. Also, if you'd like to get your hands on a copy of his book, go to our Facebook page and you'll see underneath the show how you can get your hands on a copy of this for yourself. It's absolutely worth the experiment. You know, you're doing yourself a favor and giving yourself a gift. Go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and tell everybody that you know how much you love Karen's Couch. Join us here next week for more enlightenment and more brilliance from extraordinary people all over the globe. Thanks for sharing the show with us, and we'll see you same time, same station, next week. Bye for now.
Hi, it's Damien Christoph here. 2015 marks perhaps the most important event the Wellness Couch has ever conducted. We've had 2 sold-out wellness summits these last 2 years, but honestly, nothing will come close to our first ever wellness breakthrough. Your favourite Wellness Couch experts, the Up For A Chat girls, Quirky Cooking's Joe Whitten, Stu Hayes, Marcus Pierce, and of course the Wellness Guys, are all gathering in Dandong Ranges for 3 days and 2 nights for one incredible event. If you want possibly the greatest peer group in health and wellness to help you catapult your life to the next level, then we'd love to see you at the Wellness Breakthrough in February. For more information, go to www.thewellnesscouch.com.
Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.